Shalom, everyone. So, a few people asked me what the situation is and how to relate, how to react to the situation of the war today here in Eretz Yisrael. And I thought that it was a very good way to approach it would be to learn a little Rav Kook. And even the people that are like Rav Kook people don't always learn Rav Kook. So I'll give you like a little background. This is the book. It's called the Book of Orot. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda said that this book is, if all of the books of Rav Kook are holy, this is the holy of holies. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda felt that this book of Orot contained the most essential teachings of Rav Kook, because in this book, this is where in this book, this is where he explains the ideas, the essential ideas of what does it mean? What is Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people? And what does it mean, the concept of war? Now, Rabbi Kook wrote a series of essays during World War I. And World War I was a very a great shock to all of the humane philosophers. And everyone was certain that after the Victorian era, humanity had succeeded in achieving a high level of culture. And as a result, they were able to proceed. Maybe I'll give one example. Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who was a rabbi in Germany, has a commentary on Tehillim, and he explains, what does it mean, Hazorim b'dim'ah b'rina yiktzoru? And those who sow with tears harvest with joy. And he said that the Jewish people throughout all of the generations actually sowed with tears, and we are now harvesting with pride, and that now all of mankind and the German people have learned etiquette and proper manners from the Jewish people throughout history. So you can imagine what a shock it is to all of the philosophers in the world, where everyone was certain that humanity had attained a high level of morality, and all of a sudden, everybody goes and leaves their homes and their families to go kill each other. And tens of millions were killed during the First World War. So Rav Kook approaches this, and what I'll do is I'll share my screen so that you'll be able to see the text. And I'll read it along together with you. And Rabbi Kook writes, "Sheyesh milchama gedola be'olam mit'orer koach Mashiach." And he says that when there's a big war in the world, the power of Mashiach is invigorated, and we experience a heightened level of messianism. And here we see Rav Kook as the giant World War I is wreaking havoc, and all of the Jewish communities are being destroyed throughout Europe. And everyone is forced to run away from the front lines. And World War I basically devastated European Jewry. And as everyone is being destroyed, Rav Kook is looking at this massive destruction of Jewish institutions in Europe. And he's saying, when I look at this, I see Mashiach. And you say, well, what in the world? Well, if that's the Mashiach, there's an expression in the Gemara, Yeteh v'lo achmineh. Rav Yosef says that the Mashiach will come, and I certainly hope he comes, but I hope I'm not there when he comes, because it's going to be so costly and so painful that we certainly hope he comes, but I certainly hope that I'm not there at the time. So here, Rav Kook, when he sees the unbelievable destruction, and the destruction of World War I was something that mankind until that time had never experienced. And it just wasn't a thing that everybody in the world was fighting everybody with each other. And Rabbi Kook is looking at this and he's saying, the only explanation that Rav Kook can see is that there is something very messianic going on. Now, I want to read it together with the next two sentences, because today we're also in a very similar situation. And for instance, today, I don't know if there's anybody in Israel that doesn't know somebody, at least know somebody who knows somebody. And my son-in-law gave me a statistic today that statistically, the amount of people that were wounded and affected today in Eretz Israel are greater than the percentage of people that were affected in 9/11 in the United States. And that the tragedy is of unbelievable magnitude. And I think specifically because of that, it gives us a tendency to be myopic and to focus on the personal and present pain. And here, Rav Kook actually allows us to take one step above ourselves and to kind of identify with a higher stature of ourselves. And he says, "Kashiyesh milchama gedola ba'olam mitorer koach Mashiach," and that when there is a big war, then the power of Mashiach is being awakened. And today also, when we see that it's not just a wanton massacre, and that whatever is happening is developing into a war, and that all of the stock markets around the world have gone down as a result, which means that it's a big world, and that people all over are actually anticipating something big, and that it's just the beginning of something big. The fact that the U.S. Is sending one of their aircraft carriers to here. They usually don't do it for a neighborhood skirmish. And that it appears that they also feel that there's something big cooking in this war, and that it's just not another neighborhood brawl with thugs. So, first of all, it's really important. Just that first sentence already opens up vistas for us and allows us to see an unbelievable stature of, oh, okay, this is Mashiach. Now, we still have some questions to answer if we're going to say that this is Mashiach. And let's read the next sentence. And Kashiyesh milchama gedola ba'olam mitorer koach Mashiach. Et zamir higia. Zamir Aritzim. Now, Rav Kook is taking a verse from Shir HaShirim that says that it's the time of the songbird. And when it says that in Shir HaShirim, it means that It's springtime, and we can hear the songbird singing. And here Rabbi Cook is using the word zamir and is saying, like we say in zmirot, and that zamir also has a Hebrew synonym, and it means to cut off, and it's one of the 39 melachot, zmirah. It's to cut off branches that you don't need for fruit, those that sap the life force out of the plant and do not allow us to really achieve the full vitality of the plant. So he says, Eit zamir higia. And here he's using this as a pun, zamir aritzim. Yes, the word is zamir. It's a songbird. But he's saying that the songbird is the destruction of the evil. And he says that we see in a war that the conclusion of a war is the destruction of evil. And that if we analyze the results of World War I and World War II, we see that those that were evil were eliminated through the auspices of war. And that Rabbi Cook, even though it's in the middle of the war and you still don't see the winner, you don't see this entire thing, this is what he is seeing. And the same is true with World War II, that now when we look in a retrospective historiosophic fashion, we can see that definitely as a result of World War II, the Nazis and their regime were eliminated, and they weren't only eliminated by the United States and England and Europe. They were eliminated by everybody, and even the Germans today say, "Well, let's see what happened, where we went wrong, and let's try to rectify. Let's make sure that this doesn't happen to us again, and that all of mankind." Was actually perfected in a fashion as a result of World War II. And all of mankind reached a higher level of kind of what Rabbi Kahana would say, never again. And that all of mankind is kind of sworn to the legacy of World War II. Let's not do this again. And let's make sure that we ourselves do not become part of inhumane machine. Et higia. And I'm going to have to mute you. Sorry about that. Now, what the entire world becomes a little more rectified. The kol hator nishma ba'artzeinu. The voice of the songbird. Now, there's two kinds. There's a turtle dove and a songbird. The songbird is known for its singing. The turtle dove is known for coming and pooing and cooing in the time of spring. And that it comes only at certain times. And kol hator nishma ba'artzeinu. This songbird is heard inside of Eretz Yisrael. And it's interesting that this is the next sentence. So the first sentence is, when there's a great war, we anticipate the Mashiach. Number two is, as a result of the war, we anticipate the destruction and obliteration of evil. And the world will become a more rectified place without the evil regime that was the cause of this war. So that's already number two. Let's take a look at number three. And I want to purposely, I'm pushing to get to verse number three, because I think today a lot of us are just in shell shock from the original start of the war and the tragic loss of life and everything that's going on in Israel. And the third sentence here relates most to that. Hayechidim anispim below mishpat, regarding the individuals who pass away below mishpat. It's not their time, and that they're innocent bystanders. And it's pretty obvious that we all witnessed thousands of innocent bystanders yesterday, and they're just people, and that the only thing they have in common is that they're just regular people that want to do regular things, and whether it's take care of their kids or party or do things that human beings do, this is what these individuals were doing, and they definitely didn't deserve death for whatever it is that they were doing. So Rabbi Cook is saying, Hayachidim anispim below mishpat. How do you explain and how do you relate to that philosophically? The fact that they're individuals who are dying unjustly. They don't deserve to die. Hayachidim anispim below mishpat shebetocha ma'apecha shel shetef ha'milchama. Because when there's a war, so by definition, war means that people die and that you're going to have guilty people dying. And that was the second sentence. And the guilty people who die are the people from the evil regime. And then you also have good people who die. And that it's not only that everybody who dies is a sworn Nazi, yet you have a lot of very good people who are fighting against the Nazis who also die. And we have millions and millions of testimonies from the Holocaust. And we have recently thousands here in Eretz Yisrael that are all testimony to the fact that they don't deserve to get hurt and wounded or killed. Hayechidim anispim below mishpat. So how do you explain all of these undeserving deaths? Shebetocha ma'apecha shel shetef ha'milchama. That's what happens when there's war. When there's war, so people who are not deserving of death also die. Yesh ba mimidat mitat tzadikim amechaperet. They all are part of the concept, the death of tzaddikim that atones. And here, Rabbi Cook describes an interesting metaphysical concept. Olim im lamala b'shorash ha'chayim v'atzmut chayihem mevi erech klali l'tova v'livracha el klal binyan ha'olam b'chol ha'rachav u'muvanav. Now, what does that mean? Rabbi Cook is actually explaining a very interesting concept. And he's saying that the people who die, the tzaddikim who die during a time of war, they are actually tzaddikim. And there's a story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in a yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and one of his Talmidim said, well, I'd like in Elul to leave the yeshiva and go to Kivrei Tzadikim to pray at the graves of Tzadikim in Tzfat. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said, well, we're here in Beit Vagan neighborhood. It's enough to just to walk over to Har Herzl. You don't have to go any further than that. This is a mountain of Tzadikim. And I'm sure that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach knew the levels of Torah of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and of the Arizal and everybody who is buried in Tzfat. And nevertheless, he said, no reason to go to Tzfat. You have people here on Har Herzl that have the same value. And if you want to pray at Kivrei Tzadikim, so why don't you just go to here, to Har Herzl, and pray here? And this was the same kind of a thing that we had, that Rav Cook is explaining that during a world war, you have people that die that don't deserve to die. And he's explaining a metaphysical mechanism that's going on here. And he's explaining that people die, and that the reason why people die is it empowers the entire process. And he says that we're looking at only one small part of the entire picture, and that it's extremely painful from our vision to see someone die. One person is, our entire world changes. And I remember hearing Rabbi Cook speak at numerous funerals. May heaven save us from having to attend numerous funerals. But there was a very interesting common denominator that Rav Tzvi Yehuda always included within his eulogy. And he would always mention how good and how well off the person who passed away is. And he's saying that we don't have to feel sorry for him. He has it in a, he's like, he's in a great place now, and he's in Olam Haba. And if he was massacred, then he's on a very high level and a very high level of the next world. And he's in an Olam HaNeshamot. But our pain is focused exclusively at ourselves, at the family, at the people who remain behind in this world. And that kind of puts a perspective on all of the pain that we feel and we suffer for death of loved ones. And here Rabbi Cook is explaining that there is a metaphysical mechanism that as people leave this world, they enter the next world, and the impact of the energy of their soul that in this world had only a very small portion of the energy effective, and the body is not the most effective fashion for the soul to maintain itself. Again, if a person is super holy, like Chanoch or Eliyahu HaNavi, then they can turn their body into something spiritually etheric and actually manifest an unbelievable amount of mega soul energy. But for regular people, after a person leaves his body, then his soul is unshackled and free to manifest greater energy. And the energy impact of unshackled souls actually impacts the nitty-gritty of this world in a positive fashion. And I'm going to read this sentence again, and this is what Rav Kook is referring to when he's talking about the death of the individuals. The individuals who die an undeserving death. Those that are killed because of the wheels of war. These individuals are tantamount to tzaddikim who die. The souls ascend. As their souls ascend, the essence of their life brings a higher level of goodness and of blessing to the entire edifice, to the foundation of the entire world. Everything, the whole world is perfected. That includes the world that we live in, and that all of the individuals, all of these hundreds of people that were killed yesterday and the day before and the day before that, all of these people are all part of Mitat Tzadikim. They have all attained a level of dying for Kiddush Hashem. I personally saw. I have a friend who is a very staunch Haredi, and he belongs to the Haredi faction. And he was mourning so profusely for one of the students of mine who passed away at the party. And even though he's very far away from a rave party, but this person ascended his personal essence and qualifications and became a tzaddik, and he's a kadosh, and he became a holy person. He was killed because he was a Jew, and everyone in Israel identifies with him now. And his soul has the quality of mitat tzadikim that atones for everyone and perfects the world in a metaphysical manifestation. And this is what Rav Kook is saying. So far we saw three sentences. Sentence number one, when there's a big world war, that means that the Mashiach is waking up in a big way. Number two, the evil are doomed in a war. And the advantage of war is that the evil regimes witness destruction. Number three, he addresses in sentence number three, and addresses the tragedy of the individuals who are lost. And he explains metaphysically and philosophically that they're not lost. They're perfected, and that they're elevated to the level of mitat tzadikim. They have the death of tzadikim and kedoshim, those of holy Jews who ascend and impact the world in a very profound manner. Today, if we just analyze the situation of the Jewish people, we see how we've gone through such a major psychological national change in just a day. And that if you would have asked people 4 days ago, what do you think about Jewish unity in conquering Gaza? They would all say, are you crazy? Are you insane? That is the last thing on the political map. And that even though God had designed that the Jewish people will have unity and the Jewish people will conquer Eretz Yisrael, someone would have said, we're very, very far away from that. But as we experience this tragedy, we see that it has impacted the Jewish people in a profound fashion. And that today we are in a completely, completely different stature and stance than we were just a day before the war. And that we can see the unity of the Jewish people and how everybody is all part and parcel of the war effort, and how we're all banding together and mourning together and fighting together, and in a way that was not even thought about a few days ago. And the same thing with national consensus to conquer Eretz Yisrael and return to our homeland. If you would have asked anybody in Israel a few days ago, what do you think about the idea of returning to our beloved land, Eretz Yisrael, and once again regaining Eretz Yisrael so that the Jewish people own all of Eretz Yisrael, especially Gaza, they would have said, are you crazy? And the word Gaza was synonymous with Gehinom. And we have to realize that it's part of Eretz Yisrael. It talks about Shlomo HaMelech, ki hu rode b'chol evra nahar mitifsach va'ad Aza, that Shlomo HaMelech was a king, and his kingdom included Aza, which means that the kingdom in the end of days will also include Gaza. It does not include an evil regime that will remain as part of an enclave in Eretz Yisrael. And when the Mashiach appears, he will appear and conquer Gaza. So we see how the individuals who have lost their lives without justice, they didn't deserve to die for any individual sin that they did. Rather, they were elevated to the level of tzaddikim and kedoshim and impacted the psyche of the entire Jewish people in such a positive fashion that today the Jewish people are heightened and rectified in both unity and in a united desire to conquer and to reclaim Eretz Yisrael as our land. Acharka, ketoma milchama. So now Rabbi Kook is already looking at the end of the war. It's very interesting to realize that Rabbi Kook is writing this in the middle of World War I. He's not writing this at the end, but he already envisions in his mind's eye what happens at the conclusion of the war. V'achar kach ketoma milchama. As the war ends, mitchadesh ha'ulam v'ruach chadash v'raglei Mashiach mitgalim biyoter. After the war ends, the world is renewed v'ruach chadash with a new spirit v'raglei Mashiach mitgalim biyoter. The effects of the Mashiach are very, very apparent. The greater the war in both quantity and quality, the greater the war, the greater the anticipation for the results of the messianic development that will occur as a result. Now, again, Rabbi Cook is looking at World War I, and he sees the Ottoman Empire, and he sees that nothing really changed in the Ottoman Empire for the last 400 years. And he sees, oh, wow, there's a war. Finally, the Ottoman Empire will be destroyed as a result of this war. And Eretz Yisrael will go from the Ottoman Empire to the Jewish people. Again, it went to England, who established it as a national homeland. But World War I was stage number one of the transfer of Eretz Yisrael from the Ottoman Empire to the British Empire. World War II saw the transfer of Eretz Yisrael from the British Empire to the Jewish people. And Rav Kook is seeing that the result of a war, achar kach ketoma milchama, mitchadesh ha'olam beruach chadash, people are reinvigorated. They have a completely new spirit. V'raglei Mashiach mitgalim biyoter. This is the time where the footsteps of the Mashiach are most apparent. U'lefi erkah shel godel ha'milchama b'chamuta u'v'eichuta. The greater the quality and quantity of the war, kacha tigdal ha'tzifia l'raglei Mashiach sheba. That is only testifying of how much we have to wait for the Mashiach. So here again, Rav Kook is explaining how to relate and react to World War I. And again, in the middle of World War I, most of the Jewish people were at a total loss of explaining anything. And they were in a state of personal mourning over their livelihoods, over their yeshivot, over all of the Jewish institutions that were just totally destroyed. All of the individuals who were massacred and killed and just lost their life senselessly. And you had the millions of Jews who became refugees and were trying to make heads or tails of, well, what's happening? And here you see that Rav Kook is saying, the greater the tragedy and the greater the war, the greater our anticipation for the messianic footsteps that are going to come in its wake. And it's interesting that the Chofetz Chaim also wrote a book in wake of World War I, explaining how all the signs of the Mashiach have come, and that now we've experienced all of the signs, and the only thing we're really waiting for now is the Mashiach himself. Let's continue with another line here. Milchemet ha'olam shel achshav. Now Rav Kook, after he gave a basic introduction, is saying this world war that we are now experiencing. He's talking about World War I. Tzipia nora'a gedola v'amuka yeshba. We have tremendous, deep yearning and anticipation. Now this goes together with the fact that Eretz Yisrael is becoming revived. And he says, Ketz HaMegula. Ketz HaMegula is a concept brought down in the Gemara that talks about the fact that Eretz Yisrael gives fruit. It says, Kevan she Eretz Yisrael notenet peirotea ba'ayin yafa, en lecha ketz megule mizeh. Once Israel gives forth its fruits with a positive fashion, and we have a lot of fruit. There is no greater sign of the Messianic era than fruit in Eretz Yisrael. A very simple barometer. Fruit. Do you have fruit in Eretz Yisrael? It's interesting that today we not only have fruit, but Israel somehow became an agricultural empire. And that everyone in the world is asking how Israel does this. I know that John Deere sent people to Maale Gilboa to find out how they use the tractors, because they're able to get more bushels of cotton out of their cotton fields than anywhere else in the world. And in Thailand, they sent people to Eretz Israel to see how we raise kiwi, because for some reason we're able to do it better than they did it where we took the trees from. And 75% of the world's majhul dates come from Eretz Israel. These are the dates that we took from Morocco and then grew them. Eretz Israel has become an empire. All of the nations of Africa are asking us how we do it. And these are Yisrael. So Rabbi Cook is seeing the first orchards being grown in Rishon LeZion and Petach Tikva, and he's saying, look, that's it. This is the sign that we're in the Messianic era. And if I look at World War I together with Petach Tikva and Rishon LeZion, I come to a conclusion that something big is happening. Now, if we extrapolate and we continue with that line of thought, and we say, okay, we've got an entire state of Eretz Yisrael here, and we have the Jewish people returning to Eretz Yisrael. And again, we see that we are on the move, and we're at the tip of an iceberg of something very big here, and there's a very big war that we're anticipating right now. So then we understand that it's not just a local brawl, and it's not a senseless massacre, but we are actually witnessing the footsteps of Mashiach knocking at our door in a very big way. The way to properly look and relate and analyze this is only with a great Weltanschein. You have to have a heightened stature. You can't just whimper and mourn and be myopic in seeing the tragedy, but you have to raise and you have to rise to the situation with a de'ah gedolah. That's one of the traits of the Mashiach. Ruach chokhma u'bina, ruach da'at v'yirat Hashem. He has da'at. Bigvura tzuma. That's also one of the traits of the Mashiach. U'bi'igayon amok v'choder. You have to be pensive, and you have to look deep, and you have to understand the under trappings of what Hashem is doing. B'tshukat emet, you have to really want to know the truth, and you can't just say, well, it's probably because my students came late to class today. It has to be a real, honest search for, well, why is God doing this? Uverayon bahir, a crystal clear understanding. With all of this put together, tzrichim lekabel et ha-tochen anisa shel or Hashem, this is the way we have to understand and fathom the deep light of God, the deep content of the light of God, which is lofty, hamitgale bepula nifla'a, that is appearing with this wondrous activity. Now, again, Rav Kook was very well aware of the tragedy of the Jewish people, and he has letters, and he's helping people, and he's working valorously to help anyone who he can. He's not unaware of the pain. Nevertheless, he calls this pu'ula nifla'a, a wondrous time, ba'alilot ha-milchamot, that what is happening as a result of the wars, halalu biyichud, specifically this war, and he actually called the shot correctly, as a result of World War I, the British Empire was able to take Israel from the Ottoman Empire and then declare that it would become national homeland for the Jewish people, which was stage one of the redemption. Baal Milchamot. Now, here at the end of Rabbi Cook's paragraphs, he usually has a quote of a verse or a source. And when Rabbi Cook was attacked by the ultra-Orthodox Kanaim in Yerushalayim, the Rebbe Migor came and spoke to him personally, and he said, tell me, how do you understand what you wrote? And Rabbi Cook said, I didn't write anything that I don't have a source for. And he said, well, how do you explain the fact that you wrote that the more gymnastics that Jewish people do, that impacts the great tzaddikim to understand and to fathom depths of Torah? Where did you get that from? He said, well, I took that from the Mora Nevuchim. And then the Rebbe Migor said, well, we don't learn the Mora Nevuchim either. And this was the conversation that he had. But Rabbi Cook is telling us a very interesting thing. He's not saying anything that he does not see a source. Now, at the end of this paragraph, he's telling us everything that I'm telling you is davening. If you just look at the pshat of what it means when we daven, that's exactly what it says. And he's quoting here davening, and he says the following: Baal milchamot, zorea tzedakot, matzmiach yeshuot, borei refuot, norati lot, adonai niflot, amachadish b'chol hamachadish b'tuvo, b'chol yom, tabin ma'aseh bereishit, or chadash al tzion ta'ir, v'nizkeh kulanu me'ira la'oro. So this is a quote from the Shacharit prayers, and he's explaining that this is not just a potpourri of various traits of God, that he is is the one who does war, and he also does tzedakot. Tzedakot means righteous things. He does the right thing. Yeshuot, salvation. Refuot, cure. Tehilot, he is Norat Tehilot. He is a person that commands an awe of prayer. Adonani Flaot. And he's explaining that this is not just a bunch of different unassociated traits, but the first word here, Bala Milchamot, the fact that God is the one who wages war, all of these other traits are subsections of the war. There is tzedakot and yeshuot and refuot, tehilot, niflaot. There is tuv, b'chol yom, chidush ma'aseh bereishit. And he says that the conclusion of everything is going to be the result, or chadash al tzion ta'ir, v'nizkeh kulanu me'ira la'oro. The end game is known by everybody, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will shine a new light on Zion, v'nizkeh kulanu la'oro, and we'll all, everybody in the world, our end game is that we will be a light to all of the nations, and the Mashiach will be the Mashiach for the Jewish people and for everybody, and that Kimi Zion teitzei Torah u'dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, and this is the end game, and that this is all part of what he sees in World War I. And he says World War I is the first word that includes all of these other words. So we take this and we learn from this that when we see this war, we see everything that we say in the Shacharit davening included in this world, in this. Now, I have another 10 minutes, and I wanted to open up for questions. I'm sure that you probably all have questions or clarifications, and I'd like to use these last 10 minutes to hear you and your questions. Yes. Hey, Tom.
First of all, thank you for your time and for making a Zoom. I guess my question is kind of speculative. Like, if you look at Orach Milchama, and in particular, your book on the subject, it seems that Rav Kook's big focus is on Esav, on the like the fourth thing in the prophecy in Sefer Daniel. Like, what do you think? What do you think would have been said if the focus was on Ishmael, if he lived at a time of a Jewish state? And how do you think spiritually the clash, like, How do you think things will play out between Israel, Ishmael, and Esau? I guess on like a global scale.
I think that the final end game, again, I don't know exactly the different stations that we're going to have to go through to get to the final end game, but our final end game is we have an alternative to Western society, and that the advent of the Mashiach is the advent of a cultural change in a paradigm level. And the idea of the Mashiach is not only so that we can eat Italian pizza and New York hamburgers in Yerushalayim without being oppressed. That might very well be part of the final Messianic era. However, the final Messianic era is that the culture of man will change. The Jewish people will be the center, the heart will be able to beat in a body, and that we'll have a symbiotic relationship with the entire world. And instead of being faced with anti-Semitism, we will be in a state of harmony where everyone will come to us and say, please help us attach ourselves to Ribono shel Olam. Today, Western society is basically predicated on a separation of state and church, which allows the individual to live a culture and a life which is denuded from divinity. Judaism is predicated on the exact opposite of that. And the Mashiach is the one who's going to bring this change to the world. Now, this is a change of Edom. It is not necessarily Arab, and that when we talk about world culture, the Arabs, the Chinese, everybody is trying to adopt this Western culture. And the culture that we have to offer the world is different, in fact, in the way that we see the individual and the pleasure of the individual, and that this is only part of worshiping Hashem, and that the end game of the entire process is that the Jewish people will live in harmony with all of the nations of the world. And it could be that there will be many Arabs that will live in Eretz Yisrael, and they will all volunteer, and they'll probably fight with each other who can be our Shabbat goy, and who will help us reach our mission. And they'll probably say, would you like us to make a jihad so that everybody will become Jewish? And we'll have to kind of hold them back and say, no, that's all right. You don't have to make a jihad. It'll work out peacefully. The end game includes a mitigation of Esau, not of Yishmael. But thank you. Thank you for your question. Any other questions? Yes, but your microphone is off.
Me?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Really interesting, really uplifting. I'm curious on a personal level. We live here in Jerusalem, and we're kind of afraid. This is our first war. We made Aliyah 2 years ago, and we're thinking, should we go back to America to be where it's safer, or should we stay here? We're trying to figure out what where's the right place to be.
Oh, wow. Well, of course, this is the place to be. I mean, there's not been like, I'll tell you. My flight leaves at 10:40 this evening. I had plane tickets to Australia. There's a bar mitzvah of a relative, and me and my wife were supposed to fly to Australia. It's probably like the most quiet place in the world. I don't know if anything happened in Australia in the last couple hundred years. And we canceled our tickets, and we said, no way, if there's a war, we're here through thick and thin. And it's actually an honor to be able to be here in Eretz Yisrael in a time of war. I'm actually kind of happy that I'm older and I have the experience of all of the wars of Israel, including the Yom Kippur War. And I remember, if I can give like a funny anecdote, like from 50 years ago in the Yom Kippur War. I remember I was Yom Kippur in Merkez Harav. And in the middle of Yom Kippur, the air raid sirens suddenly went off like from nowhere. And I knew from my education in the United States that when there's an air raid siren that goes up and down, that go into the bomb shelter. And in Merkez Harav, they had this beautiful, giant bomb shelter. I don't know why they had such a giant bomb shelter, but it was like really a bomb shelter that everybody, all of Merkez Harav, could have easily fit in. It was like just room after room after room. So I ran into the bomb shelter, and I go into the first room, and the second room, and the third room, and the fourth. And I was the only one there. And I like, it took me a while to go through all the rooms of the thing. And then as I come out of the bomb shelter, I see two guys from the yeshiva running up the stairs. So I start running after them. And I said, is this the bomb shelter? I said, yeah. I said, well, where are you going? He said, well, didn't you hear there was an air raid siren? I said, yeah. So like, as I'm chasing them up the stairs, we're having this discussion. I said, well, where are you going? I said, well, we're going up to the roof because there was an air raid siren. So we're going to see the dogfight on the roof. I mean, who wants to be in a bomb shelter? And that was my like initiation to the Israeli mentality in the time of war. And now, like 50 years later, so I have a more mellow approach to the air raid sirens. Maybe I'll tell you another story. In the Gulf War, I was also in an army unit. And we were in charge of going to where the missiles fell and taking care of whatever needed to be taken care of where the missiles fell. It was a special unit that was meant to be sent to where the missiles fell. So, again, there was an air raid siren. So, like, this time I had already learned. I know what you do when there's an air raid siren. So I didn't even try to go to the bomb shelter. I just ran up to the roof. And sure enough, the whole unit was on the roof. Seeing the Scud missile and say, oh, look, you can really see it good now. Oh, look at that. Oh, wow, you see it so great. Everybody's like so excited. I said, aren't we seeing it like a little too good, you know? And then we saw the Patriot missile come and take it down. I said, oh, that was so much fun, like fireworks. And I don't think anybody in my unit even thought of going into a bomb shelter. Now, I don't want to leave with that uneducational note and that you should definitely go into the bomb shelter, take care of yourself. But at the same time, you should adapt a little bit of the mellow attitude of the Israelis. Oh, it's another bomb shelter. Take care of yourself. Be safe. You have my bracha that you should all survive the war. And the trick to staying sane is volunteering. Find something to volunteer, and you'll be very happy that you're here with all of us. Bezrat Hashem, we should all drink a l'chaim by Yeshua Hashlema.
Chaim, l'chaim.
Thank you for joining.
Hi, Rabbi. Thank you for your time.
Shalom, shalom.
Shalom.